We are accountable to the people, Jack. Likewise, the Qatman comes from to this body. So my problem, Chair, is that I agree that nobody, I mean, that everybody that's supposed to be here are not here. But remember, this is the second. Now, you have rightly pointed out, Chair, that it can not only happen in the third quarter. You see, Chair, I have over the years experienced that some entities, some departments, would play all sorts of ducks and drakes games. I mean, at a meeting where I was yesterday, a presentation is made on a very important issue. And if you look at that presentation had nothing in it. Those people had to be told, go back and see that you put the proper presentation together. Now, Chairperson, this is my problem. How we are going to address it, I'm not a genius, I'm just an ordinary human being. But I can see, Chairperson, that there's something here that tells me that when the one will be present, the other one won't be there. There'll be excuses and all sorts of things. I may be accused of perhaps precipitating things. But you see, Chairperson, when you are great, and I didn't get gray in the sun, I've experienced how some entities play ducks and drakes with us. And if you're not firm, Chair, they sell you out for the lowest price on the market. And I don't want to be sold out, Chair. My conscience will not allow me. So, Chairperson, if we are not stern and firm, I'm afraid we'll have problems. Now, all I want to say, Chair, is I have many questions to ask IDT. Because I'm extremely concerned, Chair, about the way procurement's right.
Don't get to the detail of it.
But, Chair, all I'm saying, Chair, unless this committee is firm, Chair, and we take firm decisions, and we implement those decisions, Chair, they will come and play ducks and drakes with us all the time. Thank you, Chair.
I'm going to take two more hands to take the decision. Because you've spoken, my buddy said it will be the last. All right. Everybody else wants to speak. We'll allow members to exhale, and then I'll take a decision afterwards, starting with Babafele, Kaliso, Makakula, and then we have to take a decision.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable Makakula proposed, and Honorable Wynne seconded Makakula. Now, Honorable Baliasa has clearly proposed again that this meeting should adjourn. I'm supporting Honorable Baliasa, Chairperson, because what we are doing here is not just a slash. One, DPW are here as observers. And we are saying the difference of observers too. It can't be called a person.
No? All right. We'll allow people to exhale. You've been answered. I think you've been public. Unless you want to say something different to what he has said. But we must allow members, all of them, to say that they will take a decision. But it seems overwhelmingly that the decision... No, we're talking about here, members, individual members. And we're talking about party individuals. Now, I'll talk to you, Mr. Sal. We're talking about individual members that are here, because the committee is made up of individual members. And even if we talk about parties, then the parties also go by proportion. You can't equate the DA with the ANC in terms of strength in parliament. That's why I'm trying to move away from party politics to individual members, so that everybody says the same. But if we must go on the strength of one party, then indeed their party has more members than the DA in terms of in this committee. I really don't want to go that way. The decision is, honorable members, how do we do justice to our oversight problem? That's the decision. Is it worth it carrying on with a serious role player not in presence, or is it worth it waiting our time? You know, we have oversight, for instance. That's why I said I want to take a decision. Our first meeting for oversight, I don't have a problem cancelling our first oversight visit to a committee meeting. I have no problem with that. Instead, our program had said we would go on oversight for the first 2 weeks, like all other committees must do. But if it means that we will cancel one oversight visit to one facility to meet then I'm sure we can arrange it. So I really don't get into the fights about whose word is stronger than everyone else's word. I just think we need to do justice to what is a very serious threat. So the proposal is, Mr. South, that we will ask the departments to come back with people that are mandated to answer questions and not just as observers when it has happened. And not say, well, I can't answer because so-and-so is not here. Similarly, we will ask IDD also not to send junior individuals, but to send those that were part of the decision-making, because it's the accounting officer or that equivalent, the CEO in this case, that should be answering this question. So that we clear Mr. Abraham's concern that will we have absentees next week. You are here, Commissioner. We certainly will give you guys notice if that's the decision, so that you or is your COO is here, together with obviously the operators that are on the ground. And we will make a similar demand. We're no longer requesting, but making a similar demand on IDG. That those that come are those that were the genesis of the decision, and those that are now carrying out the day-to-day work on the decision. Because we want to understand what informed it in the first instance, and after that decision, what is transpiring as you go on. That is the decision that I'm taking, members, that we will adjourn. That's what I want to say. I don't know what to say. We're not cancelling this meeting. It's on the agenda, and it will remain on the agenda until we've had this meaningful interaction with all stakeholders present. And so that it's not my problem or Cindy's problem, but we return to this place on the 23rd of July. That's the first day back. The first committee meeting is on the 1st of August. The 14th of August, I beg your pardon. At that date, the 14th of August, for our program, schedule the normal quarterly meeting, Commissioner, that we have with you for the 14th of August. That's our first day for oversight. We schedule that meeting. If this decision is taken, then it means we're going to postpone, or we're going to squeeze, or we're going to do something. The first time that we can meet as a committee will be the 14th of August and beyond, but I don't think we're going to carry on much later than the first opportunity that we can meet. So that's the proposal I'm putting on the table. That it's 2 months from today almost that we will expect everybody to come and answer the questions that the committee wants once after the 14th of August, and then we will try and accommodate the quarters. I see you want to say something, Commissioner, but we really don't open it up to debate. But Mr. Self, you can, now that this is the proposal, if you want to say something, Mr. Self, I'll take what you want to say and then Commissioner, you'll finish up.
Chair, I just reiterate actually what my colleague Mr. Abraham said, that actually it's an outrageous situation that Parliament cannot properly interrogate this matter, and that there's a real possibility that because somebody simply doesn't pitch up for a committee meeting, you can actually stall the whole process because you can't get any answers to anything. Now, I also understood you, Chair, to say that we might not do oversight visits. I hope there are no oversight visits that we are planning in the recess period. Because if there are, then I think that it would not be justified to wait until the 14th of August. What I'm pleading for is that at the first available opportunity, and I mean the first available opportunity, the role players in DCS and the role players in IDT and the role players in the Department of Public Works come to the committee, and that we set aside enough time so that all aspects of this matter can be properly interrogated. And when I mean enough time, I'm doing about 3 to 4 hours, because it's all very well to buy the argument that to start an interrogation of this matter might preempt things, but then when we do have an interrogation of the matter, we need to ensure that everybody's here and that there is sufficient time to do what we need to do.
Commissioner,
Chairperson, honourable members of the committee, we want to thank you for this opportunity.
make this statement here, that the Department of Correctional Services views all meetings of the Portfolio Committee as important. At no point have we juniorized the delegation with respect to items that are for discussion. And under my watch, there shall be no generalization of decision making. Ever comes here, comes with the full mandate of the department. We've made it very clear, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. This meeting, given its importance and the essence that it portrays, I am at the leadership. I brought those who matter for this meeting. And I would like to confirm once again to all members here that I, as accounting officer, will always abide by the decision of this committee. Whenever we are called, we'll do so without any situation being circumvented in order to avoid issues that affect the department. And once again, I want to reiterate that the leadership that we have, that everybody who comes here will be able to open his or mouth to respond to the questions that are fielded. We are not afraid for anything that is being said to us, to our department, to accountable to Parliament, and to the people of South Africa. And therefore, once again, any miscommunication and mishap that might have happened, it was not meant in any form or shape in order to undermine the authority of this institution. Those who matter will attend. The next meeting that shall set, and that has been set today, we shall be there on the date and the time that shall be given officially by us in writing. But we have taken note of what has been said today. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
All right. We shall inform you. We are informing you now. As the DCS, we shall inform you as we do normally by way of letter. The 14th of August is the first day that we will clear everything else as to say the IDG. In fact, we were supposed to have the quarterlies. People are asking for a proper interrogation. We will have it just to answer your question, Mr. Self. The oversights are not in constituency period. Parliament's constituency period ends on a certain day, and then committees are doing oversight. Which is a normal parliamentary program. In other words, there's no plenary, but there was oversight. It's not during our constituency period. So the first plenary and committees on the 14th, oversight is also parliamentary time. So that's why I was indicating that instead of doing oversight to Portsmouth, I think it's for instance as one of our programs, or Brantford, we will forfeit that and have a meeting. So the worst case scenario will be on the 14th. The best case scenario will be sometime in Cape Town, so that members are in Cape Town. We are already planning to do Portsmouth, Brantford, and somebody else. So we will find it. Commissioner, you will be notified as the normal procedure. Colleague from IEDT, you will also be notified via the normal procedure. And we will communicate with the IEDT. The 14th. Come hell or high water, they will be here at our meeting. Thank you very much, Commissioner, and your team. I don't think we see you. There's a human rights hearing. You're welcome to stay if you so wish, but you also are free to go because we really want to have a discussion with the Human Rights Commission, but you're more than welcome at 11 o'clock. It is now 10 o'clock, so we've got an hour really because of this, but they come at 11 o'clock. We can do minutes?
Yes?
Okay, we can do in-house business, that's fine. Thank you so much, Commissioner. Thank you so much to the rest of your colleagues. We shall meet as soon as possible. Best case scenario being the 14th of August. Can we deal with in-house business?
Buongiorno is good morning.
Members, you know, we normally, you caught us off guard now, but we normally try and, from the Roman, let's edit them, and you get a version that is got at least part one edited by the time it comes to you. So in other words, it goes through quality controls before it gets to you. Unfortunately, now we've not gone through the second quality control, so we are appealing to members to be just a little bit more vigilant. Okay. No, that's fine, because yes, we would have normally picked that up before it got to you. But if you've done that, then it is just us. Should be minutes of the 22nd of May and the 12th of June. Members gone for a couple of break. Any changes to page number 2? Page number 3? What's AP?
Then 3.2.3, The last sentence is in that paragraph. Let me read the whole one. It was felt that given that the DCS individually understand the delay in the procurement of officers could not be owing to a binding challenge. I'm just a bit confused with the...
Are you understand?
Yeah, yeah.
To not attribute it. Can we change over to attribute it? Could not be attributed to a lack of funding.
Something to that effect.
Can you send it to that? Could not be attributed to a lack of funding. Anything else?
That is for me on the next one, on page 5.
Anybody else on page 5? All right, page 6.
Paragraph 3.3.3, first line. In the CSO view, JIPS had no choice.
Had no choice. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, and then 3.3.5.
Hold on. JIPS had no choice but to implement, right?
Yeah, 3.3.5. The second line, JIPS is unlikely to be granted the additional post.
3.3.5.
Yeah. The second line, just unless to be granted at the additional quota, I think it's required.
As required. We will make the changes accordingly, so as we propose them,
yeah.
We must know that that will be the final product.
So, then you go further in the same paragraph, your last sentence. It was agreed that the matter would be discussed with GCS during the 4th of June 2013. So as to, I think,
yes,
to ensure, yes. Then paragraph 3.4.1, your second sentence, but let's read the sentence in whole. Other than the obvious challenge posed by the fact that its 2013-14 budget has not been increased, and that therefore it was unable, and it therefore was unable. I just have a difficulty, but it might be correct, but I just have a difficulty with, and that therefore it was, and therefore, or you can put it, increase, and therefore it was unable. That sounds better? Yeah, and therefore, then you delete the rest. It was unable, okay? If it's
yeah.
It's acceptable.
Substance,
yeah. That's only, you know, formation of the sentence. And then on page 7, if
hold
then,
on,
not right from the other
hold
members.
On, right. Page 6, are there any other changes? Thank you. Page 7?
Page 7, 3.4.2. Your last sentence, just after 1998, add to the... If you read the whole sentence, in the period under review, a vehicle was acquired in 1998, had to dispose of after it was involved in an accident.
Yeah,
had,
you take away the one hand.
Yeah.
That's fine.
But that is what I've got there.
Anybody else on page number 7? Thank you very much. Lante,
from my side, 3.8.3, last paragraph. Of particular concern was the report that 38 mentally ill inmates, at inmates, I think it's at inmates the lead.
So is that again 3 points?
8.3. The first sentence there. Of particular concern was the report that 38 mentally ill inmates were being held. That's right. But the at inmates who followed this after in.
This must come off.
Yeah, get deleted.
All right.
All from me.
Mr. Haram, request that I'm just looking at you. I thought we had at some point thought we're not going to use members' names. Mr. Abraham, is that fine? I don't mind if members are to say that, or should we say...
It was requested.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm looking at members. Can you say that?
Yeah.
All right.
And it shouldn't be his to the board.
No, no. It was. So Mr. Abraham becomes it.
Yeah.
It becomes it, right?
Because to.
it was requested that the DCS respond to
the report.
Their report. Okay?
Well, it should be provided to the committee before 29 May.
Hold on. Response to the report the committee should be provided to the committee. Before the 31st, okay? All right. We've got that. Any other changes on page 8?
Nothing.
Page 9.
Page 9, 3.9.2. The first sentence, in many instances the reports indicated that the DCS response to matters was being, were being.
Were being? Okay, we've got was being, were being. We need to check out. In many instances the report indicated that the DCS response
to matters were being monitored by
was being, we'll take out the word being.
Word being, okay.
Yeah. Anything else?
That's all I've got.
Other minutes? Thank you. And the last thing?
Page 10, paragraph 4.2. While members did not dispute that it was impractical to manage all JIRC's functions from only two offices, I think there must be an S there, it was emphasized that the information provided by the different regions should be credible to make performance monitoring possible. So as, I think we can delete so as, is that should be credible to make performance monitoring possible.
Doesn't that read, much better? But it doesn't change any substance. We can do that.
Okay, thanks.
Anybody else? No?
That's all from my side.
Thanks. Because, like I said, we hadn't quality control. Let's just go through it quickly so that you are in agreement. We were adopted with the changes on page 5. 321. First class, halfway, unable is changed to able. You got that today? And the third last, or the last sentence that started, although the DDW had informed, we'll take away the one had informed. 322, although, that although he had been informed, we're going to delete altogether. Okay? And then 323, we're going to delete owing to a finding challenge. We will substitute that with attributed to a lack of funding. So the sentence will read, it was found that given that the DCS habitually underspent, the delay in the procurement of officers could not be attributed to a lack of funding. Happy?
Yes.
333, in the CEO's view, the DIX had, we're going to take away the one had. 335, you got it, Cindy?
Had, the had on top.
333, had, we'll take away the one had. 335, second line, JIX is unlikely to be granted the additional post as required is because as, and the last sentence after June 2, 2013, so as two, and then 341 have not been increased and therefore we'll take over that. Okay? 341. You got it. 342, there's two had, we'll take away one. 383, of particular concern was the report that 38 mentally ill inmates, we're going to take away had inmates. You got that? Yes. Inmates were held in inhumane conditions, and then each was requested, instead of Mr. Aram, each was requested that the DCS respond to the, his becomes the, reports in particular should be provided provided to the committee before the 29th. 392, in many instances reports indicated that the DCS response to matters was being, were being, whatever way they were being, so we was being for that. Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. And then 3, 4-2, functions from only two officers, of, put an S to office, you got that, Sandy? Yeah. Officers. And then the next line, different reasons should be credible to make, we'll take away, so S. With those changes, can I put the minutes for adoption, Mr. Max, and everybody else? The happy minute of the 23rd, the minutes of the 22nd have been duly adopted. Just to indicate, remember, that it's important to do this because in the absence of our minutes and our reports, we don't get given permission to go to oversight. That's the standing rule of Parliament. So these have to be done, otherwise our oversight gets rejected. Minutes of the 12th of June in venue M515. Members have got those minutes?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Again, I put page number one. Any corrections? Page number two, any corrections? Page number three, any corrections?
Paragraph 2.4, the last sentence.
2.4,
yeah, it was found that the DCS conduct could be interpreted as deliberate obstruction. As a deliberate obstruction, you leave the end there of Parliament's oversight responsibility.
Okay, you got that there?
Right. The two that's deleted, you replace it with the A, S, F, a deliberate.
Any other changes to page number three? Page four.
Chairperson.
Yes, sir.
Page 3. The matter was discussed in the meeting. The matter was discussed with the Minister of Corrections Services and then the Minister of Broadcasting.
Actually, when you refer shortly, I don't know what was the objective here in this minute, but normally when you write a document, you explain the full title of the minister, and then you shorten it as a minister, and further on you use the minister, in a legal document. I don't know whether that was the objective there.
Can take it out. All right. We'll take out the minister and back. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Any other changes on page 3? And page 4?
Page 4, paragraph 2.5. It was agreed that the meeting would be rescheduled as soon as possible. And that the DCS, the author letter sent on behalf of the minister, and the official who communicated with IDT should then also explain how the day's confusion has arisen. The sentence is a bit onslachtig, as an Afrikaans said. I've made some proposals here. It was agreed that the meeting would be rescheduled as soon as possible, comma, that the DCS delete. The DCS, the author of the letter, sent on behalf of the minister, and the official who had communicated with DCS should, and then also, as a proposal, should explain how there is confusion at the
result.
Yeah.
Alright.
So it's acceptable.
Yeah.
Paragraph 2.6. At the time, the meeting was about...
Yes. Alright.
Just something clarity. At the time the meeting was adjourned, no information I had received from. Is it fine like that?
Yes.
Okay, right. Then on 3, closure. The meeting adjourned at 10:05 and the committee's next meeting will take place on the 12th of June. That was the same day as the meeting. So
it took place on the night.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all for my
side. Any other changes on page number 4?
Yeah.
All right. This is a short one. I'm not going to repeat the changes because I think members have followed those changes. Can I put the report with those amendments? Mr. Self, seconders to the minutes being adopted. Mr. Clare and the House, those minutes have been duly adopted and will be corrected and filed accordingly. We've got half an hour. Yes, sir.
I think Mr. Fredericks is here, and we did ask as part of those minutes for an explanation.
You want to get that explanation?
Please.
Mr. Fredericks, I know we're ambushing you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here. Can you shed some light on the confusion, sir?
On last week's meeting,
yes, sir.
Okay.
The minister said that we were asked for explanation.
I will explain. The minister. Is this on the record?
Everything is on the record.
Let me get to the point.
No. Let me say to you that because they asked you. Our minister have said.
Yeah.
And it was just adopted that this committee needs an explanation from you, from DCS, and some official that we were told sent people back last week. I mean, that's what we just adopted. You're here, and people are trying to ambush you by your presence, not ambush you in the bad way, but by your presence. And maybe you should, because we're not prepared. Come prepared to answer that question at some point. We're going to ask you to explain what happened. Commissioner explained his part and apologized and whatever you'd recall, but we'd want to understand what was the role played by the people. Okay. So I don't want to put you on the tight spot now. If you haven't prepared for it, you can do it when we get back. But somebody will explain to us, as IDQ would explain to us why they were not here today. Okay, so.
Let me just say there's nothing to explain from my part myself. I'm merely the messenger. I follow instructions. I've been instructed on behalf of the minister to do the paper, which is what I did. I think the minister, the IDP, and especially the national commissioner is in a much better position to further elaborate on the topic. I've been instructed to do the letter by the instruction of the minister, and that is what I did.
Thank you.
I don't think that it is good for us to ask back, because we've got the letter on us that is coming from the office of the minister. We are going to use this letter to ask the department to respond. So I think what Grant has responded, we don't have interrogated him, because we put it in black and white. That's the one that they must tell us. What is this confusion? Thank you.
No, that's fine, no, really. You see, because we adopted a minister that said the fourth must explain.
Yes.
The fourth is Grant. If we felt as you feel and I agree with you, we should have deleted that paragraph in the minute. Because once we have a minute that we've adopted, it becomes the record of this committee. But that record says the DCS, the author of the lecture, and somebody else must explain, and IDT and somebody else. Yeah. So, and we have adopted it. Mr. Grant has done his part. I think we are happy with that. But we take note of what Longwele is saying, that at some point that it will be used as a rationale for us having put it in the minutes. Thank you very much. Done with the minutes.
Members, we cannot indicate that we were hoping to at some point adopt the oversight visit. This is our, not oversight, our third quarter. This is our last minute. And I know it's surprising you. We just want to get an in-principle agreement from you. And we can fix it up later. But our oversight visit starts on the 23rd of June. What we have proposed is that we, members can indicate whether they like it or not, because we want to submit it. We were proposing that we go and visit them that Tanzania on the 23rd of June, that's the Eastern Cape, simply because we have not been to the Eastern Cape, East London specifically. And the overcrowding was what we were going to look at there and the conditions. We had agreed on the 24th, we will go and visit the offices of the inspecting judge in Durban. You recall that the inspecting judge is in Durban, his office, the regional office in Durban. That's on the 24th, and then the next day we go to Kalagabusha, which is in Pangeni. This is all KZN. And then that deals with KZN. So KZN, it would be, I beg your pardon, the Eastern Cape, Dantane, then KZN, we visit six offices and Kalagabusha. And then the following week, on the 30th, we're going to have a look at the inspecting judge's office in Bloemfontein. The 31st, we're going to visit Harry Smith. And the 1st of August, we're going to visit Kroonstad Training Center. And that deals with three states. And members can change it. These are our proposals. Then, whilst we're in that side of the world, we go to Rooigrond, which is, I think, in the northwest. We've not been there, so we go to Rooigrond.
But the Blanche is dead, sir. You were there.
And then, that final week of our oversight, we come to KZN, to Cape Town, to Western Cape. We visit Oostwaran female units.
What day is it?
That will be on about the 6th of August, Oostwaran. And then we visit the six offices in George, because I think those are more or less at the same place. And then we go and visit Brantley on the 7th. And on the 8th we go to the Series and Van Rijnstel. Remember, those are the ones that we have done the last time we have visited them. So that's more or less, we were trying to cover a little bit of KZN, a little bit of Free State, a little bit of Eastern Cape, and a little bit of Northwest. Those are the 2 weeks oversight visits that we have. Members must give us an indication whether you want. And those are the constituency, oversight periods that Parliament has given to everybody. So we either use them for oversight, or we use them for committees. That's the program. It's oversight or committees for those 2 weeks. We chose to go on a roadshow. What members feel? 1 minute.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wanted to check. Last we're supposed to go with oversight on other countries. And we're told that we must look at our program, that our program mustn't clash with the program of Parliament. I want to check, Chair, that is it the office of the Speaker of Chair, Chair, did came back to us to say on your request of going oversight, we are allowing you to go. I want to check that, Chair, in terms of the oversight visit. How far is that
preparation? Are you talking about local oversight or study tour? There's a difference between a study tour, which is, I suppose, overseas type of thing, and an oversight, which is local here. Which one are you
talking about? Okay, I'm talking about study tour. Okay. Yes, Chief.
All right. All right. You recall, Mangwenya, that initially we did a proposal, we asked the chair of chairs to come to the committee, he said he doesn't come to committees, we sent a, we set up a delegation which included yourself, Mr. Self, Mr. Abram. We went to see the chair of chairs. He said he'll come back to us. We submitted a proposal, and we received a formal rejection of our proposal in writing. So that is where the matter is. We've done everything that we could do for our side, including sending a small delegation. We then received a negative response to our proposal, and I think we looked at a country in Africa and Denmark at the time. I'm sure we've developed a Scandinavian country in Uganda or Ghana or something like that. There's two proposals, and they were formally rejected by the chair of chairs. Let's just ask from Gwenya, and we'll come back to you later.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've got concern. I think this parliament must tell us. Somebody owe us explanation in terms of correctional service portfolio committee. Why are we not allowed to do those statutes? Really, that's why I'm asking this question, Chair. This is the end of our term. We never allow not even one statutory. But when you look at our committees, they were allowed. Yes, it's true. There was a petition that go to the office of chair of chair. But still, Chair, I'm not satisfied. Something is wrong. Something that I don't call it, what is it? But Chairperson, I'm very, very worried about our portfolio committee of correctional service. Why are we not allowed to go to the study tour? Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, I just wanted to find out what was the reason for rejection. What did you say?
You know, I don't have to respond on behalf of the chair of chairs. Really, we've done everything from our side. But if I remember certainly correct, at the time it was, I think, and we've tried to make sure that it doesn't clash with our program. At the time there was no program. Subsequently, the parliamentary report, the parliamentary program changed, and it then fell slightly into the parliamentary program slot. We can make the letter that we received available. Members then, as individual members, can do what they choose to do with it. But really, that decision is outside of our hands. It's in the hands of the speaker and in the hands of the chair of chairs. I'm not sure that there's anything else we can do at the level. But if members feel they want to take it up individually, we certainly can make that letter available, and members can use it for their take. But at the committee level, we have been rejected at least twice, so I'm not sure if we can do anything else. And I also just to indicate to members so that there is no expectation that the reality is that we will not go on overseas study tours much later. It's election time. I mean, that's the reality. We're not going to be allowed to go on overseas tours much later than the third term. That's a fact of how Parliament works. Mr. Abraham.
Chairperson, you see what intrigues me, Chairperson, is that Mama Ngwenya, what she said is absolutely correct, that in the current term, it started in 2009. I want to preface by saying, Chair, that of course it will be a futile exercise if a trip is now arranged, because we've come to the end of this term of Parliament. We don't know how many of us want to come back to Parliament. We don't know how many of us will be back on the Correctional Services Committee. So that whatever experiences we have gained could then be transplanted into the next term. So I'm satisfied that it's a futile exercise now. But Chairperson, what intrigues me is that we had a problem at that time, where Mama Ngwenya reported that the chair of chairs is not willing to come to a committee. I have a problem with the chair. I want to point out that when Mr. Jeff Doige was the chair of chairs, on another committee where I served,
there were certain things that we wanted to have cleared up. And I think Mr. Deutsch, there was a lady in the office, Zanelle was her name, if I remember correctly. They came to the committee, and they listened to us, and of course everything else followed thereafter. It had nothing to do with an overseas trip. But Mr. Deutsch did not insist that I only talk to the chairperson, or the chairperson in the work. My argument, chairperson, is that you know when you are elected to an office like Parliament, it actually means that you have made yourself available to be of service to your country and to your people. And like any servant, chair, you should be willing when you take the trappings to draw the coach and listen to people. Now over here, chair, presiding officers are there to entertain whatever problems members may have. My problem now, chairperson, is that is this a decision that is made by a singular person? Then we always talk of accountability and oversight. What sort of oversight is there on the actions of that particular individual person who is holding a reasonably high office as a presiding officer? Now, if everything is vested in that person, chair, and that person's decision is final, then I have a major problem, chair. It cannot be that a single person can take such important and major decisions. But you see, chair, I agree with Maman Gwenya, there are other committees, some of them that have gone, I think, 2-3 times in the last four years. Now, it's not a question of just wanting to go there overseas, yeah, or to any African country or wherever. It's a question of trying to compare how, in our case, correctional services institutions are run in those countries, and to perhaps impart knowledge to those countries, and of course also to take knowledge from them. That is the idea of an oversight, of a visit. Well, we are not going out on an excursion, and knowing the chairperson of this committee as I know him, he makes you work. There's no holiday. So, chairperson, I would like to ask you as chair of this committee, as when you people have your forum of chairperson getting together, to raise the issue about how these decisions are made. And is it a decision made by a singular person? Or is that person supported by a committee? Even if that committee is made up of senior officials of Parliament. And what is the criteria that they apply? If we don't question these things, Chair, that's my problem, unfortunately, Chair. I've always been a probing type of person. That why is a particular law created? It has to have a purpose. Now, if there are certain set-down standards, Chair, can we have copies of those standards? So that we can at least be better informed as to what informs the decision maker. In this case, Chair, hundreds of thousands of rands are involved per trip. It cannot be that a single person has the authority to say yes or no to the expenditure of that kind of money, Chair. And of course the whole issue then comes up about how funds for this kind of purpose are spent, how are they allocated, and as I say, Chair, what sort of criteria is there to do this? I am not accustomed to this kind of thing, Chair, where one person makes a decision, and that person is isolated in an ivory tower, that person would not be willing to come down here to meet the people that put him there. And that is my major problem, Chair. This accountability line does not exist. Thank you.
I'm not sure, Honourable Member, that I want to pursue this matter. It's really not a matter for the committee, but just to answer some of those questions, Mr. Abraham, it's not a, and I understand it anyway, it's not a single decision. The chair of CESA receives the proposal. The chair of chairs makes comments and sends it to the speaker's office. The speaker adds to or subtracts from that proposal. From the speaker's office, it goes to the chief of office, who also makes comments on that proposal, and then finances are looked at. So it's a chain of command. So it's not an individual decision. The reason why I'm saying I don't know that it's the right place, because these are policy matters of the institution. And therefore, the fora that deal with policy matters of the institution are the Chief of Forum and the the presiding officers for. They take policy decisions on these matters. So I'm not sure that if we discuss it and manage it and say this is what Vincent said and this is what Abraham said and this is what Paliso said, takes this discussion any further. We have got whoops and chairs that you indicated. Maybe we should find a way of introducing it to those forums where we raise it at the Chief of Forum and the Chair of Chairs Forum. And ask them to look at this matter. I'm not sure that the committee would be able to take it further as a committee. So that is what I'm suggesting, that we've written letters, we've asked. I can tell you that chair of chair is not going to come back to us tomorrow again. So I'm not sure what it is that we're hoping to get out of this discussion. Other than to say, let's take it to the policy boards of Parliament and take it from there. I certainly don't think it will take us forward write another letter from this committee. I don't think it's going to take us forward to receive. What we can do is to give you the formal response that we received from the chair's office in writing, and then members that can interrogate that response that you received from the chair's. But I can assure you that it went to the speaker's office, it went to the chief's office. There is no higher authority than the people of Zagra in the institution, unfortunately. So we will make those letters available to members. We'll ask them to give members the formal response, and members then can proceed further with that matter. It's 10 to 10. We're expecting those people at 11 o'clock, but it's 10 to 10. We can continue discussing. I beg your pardon, 10 to 11, I beg your pardon. Mr. Fleller?
Yes,
sir.
And
then my party, sir.
We are requesting you and our group to go back to the chair forum and raise this to the forum, the chairperson and the group's forum, to raise this matter again, because to me it doesn't make sense what is happening to this committee.
Marisa?
Chairperson, I want to raise something else and I am out.
Just while colleagues of the media and everybody else are the Hartley fish will be wondering what the hell is going on here, but we are awaiting the human rights delegates who arrive at 11 o'clock, so we're having our own in-house endeavor here, so that you understand, Mambulisa, and other members from the media, so that you understand what is happening here today.
Thank you, Chairperson. It is clear that we face a tough task for us to go abroad, so I won't go. Chairperson, to me, I want to discuss the matter of the chief's workshop. Or did we discuss it while?
No, we didn't. We didn't pick a right?
Yes. We were going to have a chief's workshop that we can brainstorm, but that was also coupled with this trip abroad for the study tour. Yeah, so I don't know, is it still going to happen because we're not going abroad anymore because we wanted to go and look for best practices and to come and so that we can benefit and add value to our students here at home. So I don't know if it's still going to happen or what is the next step now.
We will still present the third sub-program to members for comments, but I can tell you that interaction with IFED and JICS and Correctional Services and Human Rights Commission, the workshop we were talking about strengthening JICS, is penciled in for September. It sort of interesting for September where we'll have this interaction. And you're right, it would have been enriched by what we pick up overseas, but it's penciled in. Members will get a proposal of the third and quarter to make comment, and we'll formally then submit it, but it's penciled in.
How are
section. How are you, sir? I can move, you can sit down the chair. I can sit here.
Yes,
Hassan Mona. Do we need more seats? You can sit here. There's no chairs that are no-go area. Anybody can sit. First come, first serve. Honourable members, So that is really the intention of our meeting today. I'm assuming that you will do a presentation of some sort. We will then interrogate that presentation and give you some sort of experience that we have picked up in our own overnight visits, as well as what we picked up from the reports from the judicial inspectorate, and then as a family decide how we doing enough about the safeguarding of human rights within our facilities. As I said, inmate and official, official and inmate. And another thing that we might, because we have asked this question, and I'll take advantage of it, the advantage of the fact that you are here. This committee has been advocating for a long time, Advocate Mashwana, that we think that part of the solution to these abuses that we are talking about is the installation of technology that will assist management of these facilities, especially after lockdown. Now, you probably will be in a better position to explain to us whether we'd be infringing on anybody's human rights, and if we are infringing on anybody's human rights, is the human right of somebody's privacy more important than the human right of somebody that is being raped? I don't know if I'm going to say sexually assaulted, because that's what it is. Is that right of my privacy more important than the right of somebody that has been raped in prison? And we think as a committee that the installation will not solve the problem, but it will help address some of these issues. So please, if you could take advantage and answer those questions. But members have many other questions that they would want to raise, and we'd afford members to ask those questions and for you to respond. Ourselves, we don't have anything specific, just to ask the question, how we as South Africans doing enough about human rights, specifically in DCS facilities, both for those that have been found guilty and are sentenced, and for those that are still to have their court dates or court processes finalized, in other words, the remand detainees. So we're looking at that whole process. Having said that, let me start introducing myself. We'll go around this way so that you understand who you're talking to, and then we'll allow you to introduce yourself, because we've not met previously. My name is Vincent Smith, and I chair this committee.
My name is Miriam Carlson.
I'm Millennium Mix.
Good morning, Shalama Abram, a member of the committee and also a shop captain offer.
Good morning, Nkoma Tawasa, a session for the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Let us ensure that a person of the committee.
Judah Kern, International Legislative and Specialist with South African Human Rights Commission. Melanie Lee-Badmore, the Provincial Manager of EDCMS Human Rights Commission. Kristen Peterson, Policy Research Manager of Judicial Inspectorate.
Adam Carson from the Judicial Inspectorate.
Mike Masondo, Director of Judicial Inspectorate.
Grant Physics, Parliamentary Officer, Military Correctional Services.
Yeah, we always have been tense, so I don't know their names, they are new. Kajibamre,
International Volunteer. Hello, I'm Sarah Kerr, I'm International Intern at CHRC.
Rachel Ward, Research Associate, Human Rights Commission.
Now that we know each other, let us, of course, officially welcome you again, Commissioner. We're going to hand over to you. It is just about 10:45. I'm not sure how long your proceedings take, but we have scheduled this meeting for one. Can we agree that at the absolute latest, at 12 o'clock, you've done, because I know some of our members have other engagements at 12:30, so it will allow us for 12 o'clock and so whatever time to interact by the time. It reaches 12, I will indicate if you're not done, and we'll open it up for a common discussion. Thank you, Commissioner. I beg your pardon, Andrew Petzl. What is your official title? Chairperson. Commissioner. Thank you.
Well, Chairperson, honorable members, good morning. The official greeting. Let me start off by taking this opportunity to thank you, Chair, for having invited us to appear before this committee. This meeting has been long outstanding, and you know, since I came, I joined the commission in 2009. The only committee that never invited us was this committee. And I'm happy that today we finally meet, because it will be important for us to begin to budget slots for this committee. And I tried to go back a little to check whether there's been similar meetings in the past. I think there was one or two that I picked up. And with the result that the chairperson didn't find that even when you were calling for the reports, it came to us as a bit of a surprise, but I'll explain why it came like that. Because I want to start off by making an apology to you, chairperson, and to the committee. Because somewhere early this year you wrote a letter to us inviting us to appear before this committee. And we accepted the invitation and we responded to that invitation. There has been correspondence going on between our offices and Cindy. But somehow along the way, after preparing our presentation, I don't know what happened. Something fell between the crack, because we never came to the presentation. Until you wrote a letter where you really not happy with us. I'm sure members will know the contents. I will not repeat them. But the one thing that I want to make it clear to the committee and to the chairperson in particular is that it has never been our intention that we don't appear before this committee. I think any committee in Parliament has got the right to call us, because our mandate covers every committee in Parliament. And therefore, even this year, we appeared over a number of other committees. I know recently I appeared before the Housing Committee. Justice is not necessarily the only committee that we appear before. We have appeared before the Education Committee. We have appeared before the International Relations Committee. So I just want to make it clear that there is no misunderstanding on our side that this committee is not one of the committees before which we are ready to appear. And for that matter, even if the select committee was to call us to appear, we will appear. So we never took any intention not to appear before the committee. But probably as we speak, something will come out why that tradition grew even before I came to this committee, that we don't appear there. Particularly that, as our presentation will show, we deal with a lot of international conventions around the torture that takes place for arrested individuals. And that's what basically we are going to deal with, because as far as that is concerned, we have never stopped, as we'll be reporting to you. But the second one is, it's good that you have invited us once again, because when we appeared before Justice in our last appearance, there were a lot of questions whether or not we should do matters where police are involved. And the reason being that there's this independent police directorate which deals with police. And we're taken to task by the Justice Portfolio Committee to say we are not supposed to be doing matters which are still in our courts. And our argument was very clear that we are not dealing with a criminal case, we're dealing with the human rights aspect of the matter. We're not dealing with whether or not a person has committed a crime. We are looking for the violations of rights. For instance, in a protest march, we are looking at the right to protest. Where somebody is killed, we are looking at whether or not that is a violation of the human right. So we don't interfere with the judicial processes. And we never agreed on that, but I'm happy that we have agreed that we'll go back and revisit the matter. Because at an international level, all the cases around Marikana, around Tatari, when they want reports, The UN is looking for reports from us. It's not looking for reports from somewhere. Equally, when a matter relates to religion, culture, and everything, they don't go to the CRL, they come to us. And I'm sure even the correctional sense, the same happens. By saying this, I'm saying that we have not done a lot in terms of prisons, not because we don't want to, but with our understanding that there's a judicial inspectorate who visits, in my understanding, having looked at the mandate of the judicial inspector, is a person who visits prisons regularly, makes inspection, conducts inspections. Whether or not we too must go and visit prisons is a question mark which I'm happy we need to clarify that one. But we have, to a certain extent, been there in prisons where, for instance, they've been right. For instance, recently there was this rampant where we met the portfolio committee. We did conduct an investigation on that specific one. And the report is almost completed from our side to come. But we only come in when there are really specific instances which warrant that we come in and we think that the judicial inspector has not done much. Over and above that, we have got hundreds of complaints from prisons that are sent to us as an institution. And what we do, we refer them to the judicial inspectorate because it falls within his or her jurisdiction. So a number of cases that has come to us, we have referred to them. That's why when a letter was asking for reports from us, we were a little bit puzzled because we're not sure which report, because we don't have a report because we don't conduct inspections in the prison. We don't conduct the, we don't check the conditions of the prisons. We are aware, for instance, that the minister commissioned, I think, a committee to look into accounting in prison. We were not sure whether we should look into that or the judicial inspector would look into that. It's something that I'm happy, that's why I'm happy today, because we need to define where do we come in, because as a commission, where things are happening, where a right is violated, in my view, we're supposed to be there. But the question that we raise for instance in the case of correctional services is, do we have the capacity as a commission with the staff that is staggering 200? And whether or not likely it will not be in a position to do that work. And that's why from last year we've been asking for the Justice Committee for resources. And the Justice Committee agreed with us that our resources are so meager that they even made a submission to Treasury last year. And early this year we were all disappointed when Treasury turned down that request. And the committee was not happy, and we raise the matter again this year with the committee to say, look, do you think with this size of the commission? I mean, we're not even scraping the surface. So the committee now is taking over the matter. We don't know how far they will go. I thought I needed to keep that background, you know, so that I will also be very happy, you know, to be guided by this committee, whether or not we must be there within the correctional services, and if so, to what extent. So that we're able to, from our side, to check how far can we do. But as an institution, we have the ask for policing and correctional services because of the protocols which we are going to deal with here. We have got a commissioner who is there appointed in Titus and coincidentally deals with matters of safety and security and all the like. It is also interesting just to conclude so that we can start the slide, that in the one case where we also did the same, the Mankweze case, there were also question marks whether are we correct in investigating a case which is also before court. And in the process, the minister did not cooperate from the beginning up to the end, nothing happened. And we continued with the investigation because we believe that to develop our laws, sometimes the court must help us in terms of interpretation. And we made a finding against the minister, who took us to court. And last last week the court came back and ruled in our favor in that particular matter, which is a question mark because we are still being queried because we have made the finding even in the Katani matter. And we still believe that our finding is correct, the correct one, because we don't interfere with the civil case part of it, nor do we interfere with what the courts are going to find, but the human aspect of it. So it's a new case which has just come, which will inform our discussion with the Justice Portfolio Committee. But having said that, Chair, our apologies for the misunderstanding around the correspondence sent. We really would want to appear as often as possible, because we have a lot of questions to answer at an intentional level. Our slides will be very short. I think the time that we have given us with the little work that we're doing, it won't take that much time. Thank you. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for providing that background to the slide presentation. I am aware that members have received a Human Rights Commission file, and inside the copy of the slide should be in your file. Turning immediately just to let you know what I will be taking you through this morning, just a very quick recap. We are confident that all committee members are very aware of the Commission's mandate and function, but just perhaps to highlight one or two things in this regard. Then we're going to look at the Commission's approach to the promotion and protection of prisoners' rights generally. We'll then look at the interrelationship between the Commission and the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services, and then look at the Commission's complaints handling mechanism and how that relates and interacts with prisoner complaints, and then we will conclude. And I'm very pleased that I've also got my colleague Melanie Dagwell from the Western Cape Provincial Office with me this morning, because I'm sure there are going to be questions about actual complaints that come to our office. And Melanie really is working at the coalface there, and has already provided me with a number of really interesting examples of the kinds of matters that come to the Commission. So we really look forward and we would welcome that debate once we've gone through the presentation. Okay, just to recap, everyone is quite aware that the Commission is one of the Chapter 9 institutions in terms of the Commission. Everyone is very familiar with Section 184, which sets out our mandate and gives us a very broad mandate, and I think that is what the Chair was referring to. You know, very often within the Commission we sort of literally say to each other, everything can be a human rights mandate. Or when a particular person has a challenge and they've knocked on a number of doors, eventually they land up at the door of the Human Rights Commission. And so really we receive such a broad range of numbers. And considering that our staff complement, as Jay said, is less than 200, we have a head office, we have 9 regional offices, but in terms of the complaints handling, on average most of our provincial offices have a senior legal officer and then a legal officer, a few interns. Western Cape, because of its high turnover, currently has 3 senior legal officers. But I think that will just begin to give some context to this committee, that when we start speaking about matters in relation to prisoners, it's one of many, many, many complaints that we are receiving at the Commission. And I will go into some of the stats and discuss that a little later. We also have the Legal Services Program, which would be at the forefront of receiving the complaints. We have a research program, which now also incorporates the international aspects of the Commission's work, and that really looks at international compliance. And then we also have an advocacy program, which again, each of our provincial offices only has one what we call education officer. The Human Rights Commission, in terms of doing advocacy and outreach, this includes going to schools, going to communities,
going to old age homes, being called upon to do things. This is one person in each province, which the commission has. The commission as well, just in terms of our legal framework, we have the Constitution, that's in the Human Rights Commission Act. We also have regulations, which I'm going to refer to a little bit later in order to explain how some of the prisoner complaints are dealt with. And we also have a complaint handling manual. Having said all of that, and sort of having prefaced a lot about the commission and a very broad mandate, I'm just trying to sort of place this presentation within the context. I think the commission for a very long time has grappled with the issue of how do we deal with prisoners' rights, and how do we deal with the issue that there is also another independent body, the Judicial Inspectorate. How is it that the two bodies interact? Where do the mandates overlap? Where should we be working together? When should we be referring matters? But it's not just a case of looking at the individual matters that come to us. It's looking more at your broader strategic and systemic issues. And I think, and I know that we've appeared in the past before this committee, possibly many years ago, and 2-3 years ago, I think we appeared here before as well. The approach which the Commission has adopted is to look at the issue of all persons deprived of their liberty. So we're not just speaking about prisoners, we're speaking about people who are detained in police cells. We are speaking about persons who are held in psychiatric hospitals against their will. We are speaking about children who are kept in places of care. It could potentially even be persons in old age homes, although there's a caveat there, but it can potentially include that category of persons. So the Commission has taken the approach that with prisoners, it's within the broader category of our mandate of all persons deprived of their liberty. And what is it that we need to do in South Africa in order that we may address human rights violations that are occurring, and what is it that we can do in South Africa to ensure greater promotion and protection of this broad category of persons' rights. And I think that is where the Commission has come in and has for many years now had its Section 5 Torture Committee. That committee has a very, very specific mandate in terms of what it seeks to achieve, and that committee will continue to exist until it is achieved and has discharged its mandate. It's the committee which our Commissioner Danny Titus heads up, and that is to ensure that South Africa complies with its international obligations in relation to torture. And whenever I use the word torture today, I am not using it in the sense of many of us, when we hear the word, we think of a very dark, damp police cell with someone in the corner pulling up someone's nails and tires. I'm not using it in that sense. I'm using it very broadly in terms of conditions of detention, also cruel and inhumane treatment, ill treatment, punishment. So I'm using it in that very broad sense, and I'm not referring just to torture. So what is it that South Africa could do in order to improve its systems to ensure that we address the conditions of prisoners deprived of their liberty and prisoners? And therefore, we've worked very specifically in a number of ways on ensuring, one, that South Africa complies with its international reporting obligations in terms of the Convention Against Torture. South Africa is behind in terms of many of its conventions, not just the Convention Against Torture, And each year, and I hope all the committee members receive this annual report. I know that the necessary number of copies were delivered to Parliament. But each year, we actually set out a table, which we update each year, to update Parliament. And I know we always discuss this table with the Justice Portfolio Committee as to where we are. And this isn't a case of the sort of, you know, the Commission just sort of being the town hailer on them. It is more a case of, it is so important for South Africa to comply with international obligations, to report at an international level, because in the process of doing that, and what is so valuable about that process, it creates an opportunity within South Africa, within government, and an opportunity for Parliament to participate as well, to reflect on what is happening, where we are, how far we have come, and what it is that we still need to do. And by sharing this, and that includes sharing our successes and sharing our challenges, by sharing this at the international level, we can then also get the assistance from the international community, and we can also be enriched in terms of how we deal with these challenges. In terms of reporting and our international obligations, this is something we've taken up with individual government departments, we've taken it up with Parliament, we've taken it up with the OISD, the Office for Institutions Supporting Democracy. Our chairperson has had many engagements with the Department of International Relations. So this is an ongoing integral part of our work, to get the reporting that South Africa needs to get it done. And not a case of saying get it done so that we can tick the box, it's so that we can learn from it and that we can actually improve in a very qualitative manner to human rights in South Africa. The other matter which we've worked on specifically, which would affect prisoners, is issues around torture. I think there the Commission for many, many years, certainly even going back to 2003 when one of the first drafts in the Torture Bill was already circulating within the Justice Department, we had ongoing engagements on that bill, have conducted ongoing advocacy issues. And last year, the bill was in Parliament, we made submissions and we participated in that process. And it's very important that we ensure that we actually have the crime of torture on a statute book. Maybe this committee won't be as surprised, or I can even use a bit of aghast when I say that. But usually as a Human Rights Commission, when we've appeared before some other committee like Parliament and other forums, and even as international forums, and we say torture is not a crime on the statute books in South Africa, people's mouths literally drop open. They say, given your past in South Africa, how is that possible? And the thing is, we need to name the crime, and we need to have it in our legislation so that people who commit acts of torture can actually be prosecuted for it, that we can actually identify it. We can't even determine what the extent of the problem is in South Africa, because how do you pick it up? Currently, it can be assault, GBH, it could be murder. How do we know what it is? Where will we even start tackling the issue, or finding out about the issue, or working out in which area torture is taking place? We can do research, but if we don't have the tools, for example, such as prosecution. I think, and I'm sure that we would have spoken to this committee about this before, is, and I'm sure this committee is very familiar with the issue, but that is the ratification of the optional protocol to the Convention Against Torture. That's really when we speak about conditions of persons deprived of their liberty. That really is the road ahead in terms of which the Commission is pushing for. When this optional protocol to the Convention Against Torture was being negotiated at the UN, South Africa was one of the most active states parties. It's something that we as a country can be proud about, our involvement in the negotiation of that optional protocol. And we signed it in 2006, and we are yet to ratify it. And I think the Commissioner, for many years, has been doing a lot of work
within South Africa through our Section 5 committee with our colleagues from the judicial inspectorate, from the police inspectorate division as well, with academics, with some members may have met members of ATT, the Association for the Prevention of Torture. There's been ongoing work for a number of years within this commission on OCCAT. And essentially what OCCAT intends to do is to set up what's called an NPM, that is a national preventative mechanism, to prevent torture. Don't let it happen and then go and stick a bandage on it or prosecute. Let's have a preventative mechanism. Let's get it right that we stop the torture before it happens. And that is what the NPM seeks to do. So similar to prison visits, which are currently carried out by the JI, but not prison visits to go and get complaints. Prison visits to go and observe and then engage in a constructive manner to ensure that we do have humane conditions in our prison. And that has been one of the largest focuses of the commission's work, and I'm going to speak a little bit more about that in the next slide. I think, yeah, I've just provided just a few more examples of some of the things that the commission has been involved in, and I think throughout the international work which the commission does, issues of torture, of OCCAT, of conditions in prison runs through the narrative of everything that we do. We bring out, and I brought a few extra copies, we don't have many, but we do bring out an annual international report. I hope that some committee members have seen it, and we will leave copies here. It gives a wonderful update in terms of what's been happening around torture at an international level, at a domestic level, to create awareness around the need for us to comply with our international obligations. Another area where we've been very involved and where we've really highlighted as a commission issues of torture and persons that deprived of their liberty is with regards to the Universal Periodic Review, which is run by the Human Rights Council. It's a kind of peer review mechanism in terms of human rights, both in terms of the submissions, which we made as the Human Rights Commission, in terms of our presentation, which our chair made at the UN. We have emphasized the need for South Africa to comply with its international obligations in relation to torture and OCCAT. We can also note that the South African government, after its most recent appearance in 2012, has in fact agreed and committed to ensuring that it complies with OCCAT. I think another area where we've tried to push issues, and this isn't a case of just coming to push issues for the sake of pushing issues, this is to place matters on the agenda to move issues forward, is the McCullum matter, which I know that this committee is very familiar with. And in fact, after engagement with the commission, with this committee, there was a public hearing on issues of torture in prisons. Our colleague who works on this matter has been on a six-month fellowship in Geneva. Unfortunately, do not have the latest information on this matter. But it certainly is a matter at an international level, and when you attend events and people know about this matter, they ask us as South Africans about it. And it is a matter which certainly causes embarrassment and is a blemish on our human rights track record. I've spoken about the torture legislation, and then also just to mention, just in terms of our work around OCCAT and torture, our work is not just at a domestic level, it's also been at a regional level. Until very recently now, we were the official chair of the Network of African National Human Rights Institutions. Our chair has just recently become the chair of the International Coordinating Committee of National Human Rights Institutions, and therefore we handed the NANRI over to Ghana to act in the interim. But we've held a number of seminars with regional Human Rights Commission to share experiences as to how it is at Human Rights Commissions we should be addressing these matters and to discuss and debate. APT have come out also just recently this year and trained members of our staff and trained from other Human Rights Commissions around Africa. And I thought I would just highlight this statement to say that the Commission really does welcome such statements that have been made. Our Deputy Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, Alex Nell, made this statement publicly in August last year. The Cabinet did make a decision in May that it would ratify the OPCAT and that there would be meetings and that the Department will submit relevant documents to Cabinet later this year. So there's a clear intention from our Cabinet, from our government that we need to go ahead with this. The challenge is, could this be done quicker? And I think that's the challenge which I will be coming to. In terms of the interrelationship between the Commission and the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services, the Commission has a broad mandate, which I have explained, but we are also beholden in terms of the regulation to the South African Human Rights Commission Act to refer matters to more appropriate bodies where those bodies exist to deal with matters. In a practical sense, what this means, and I'm sure Melanie could speak more to this, is that where a matter comes in from a prisoner and it refers as actually a legal aid issue, we are beholden to refer it to legal aid in terms of our regulations. Where a matter comes in and it is a matter for the judicial inspectorate in terms of their legislative mandate, we are beholden to refer the matter to the JI. But perhaps sort of digging deeper down, because I'm sure this is what the committee is interested in, but I should perhaps preface this to say it's not straightforward, it's quite a quagmire to determine within a broad mandate where all these prisoner complaints go, which this committee would be interested in. So what we received from our legal services program, they gave us these stats. And for the last financial year, the Commission received 4,241 complaints. Of those, 518 were captured and recorded as Section 35 complaints. Section 35 being the section of Chapter 2 of our Bill of Rights, which deals with arrested, detained, and accused persons. And the way the Commission captures complaints is according to the rights. But this doesn't necessarily give this committee the full picture because our systems are not constructed in a way where, for example, a matter becomes a right of access to information right. Then it gets captured under the right of access to information and not under arrested, detained, and accused persons. But that number there is not even reflected of all the prisoner complaints that we get. If a prisoner, for example, has been beaten, that may become a violation of a right to bodily integrity. But the way our system is constructed for our legal services program does not allow us to draw that out of the system. And this is where it has been explained to me. So if we take what I'm saying into account and look at the 518 that are captured there, those do come from prisons, but with the caveat that there are other complaints coming into the Commission system that may not fall under Section 35. The system cannot pull those out for us the way it's currently constructed. So, but the commission because it's 13% of the total number of complaints coming into the commission, okay? And from what we've been told as well is that the overwhelming number of these complaints, of those 580, relate to legal representation, which means the overwhelming number of those complaints are coming into the commission. Files are being opened, we have our complaint handling manual, matters have to be dealt with in a particular way, files opened, has to be assessed, acknowledgement letter sent off, has to be assessment, and then it is a referral straight on to the JI. And that is the vast majority of cases that are in fact coming in. The next slide looks at individual prisoner complaints, and I think they have already mentioned that the majority go to the JI, that there's also the overlapping jurisdiction very clearly. If you look at section 35 2E of the Constitution, and if you look at section 85 of the Correctional Services Act, you'll see both referred to conditions in prison. So there's almost a 100% overlap with the JI there, and that is where we send matters. This slide will just give a sense to the committee in terms of in which provinces we're getting the most number of what we call prisoner complaints, Section 35 complaints. And the provinces which are the highest, and I can go on, that's just illustrating it in a different way. You can go on, Gauteng province is the highest, followed by the Free State, and then Western Cape and Eastern Cape are almost on a par. Further stats we were provided is that 85% of all the complaints that came in during the financial year were dealt with, 10% were still being investigated, 5% were at the assessment stage. However, what this committee would be interested in, and where it's difficult and challenging to actually dig down, is to work out what is the nature of all these complaints. Some complaints are straightforward conditions of detention, such as a prisoner writing to the commission and saying, I want study materials and I can't get study materials, okay? That is a straightforward complaint which is within a domain of JI and gets referred directly to the JI. We then receive some complaints which are more serious in nature and they have to do with medical treatment. Another example would be an allegation of rape in prison. And that is the case of the more serious one where the commission will then refer it to the JI and then monitor what is happening. The commission also refers a lot of matters, and what the commission has found as a general trend is it tends to receive quite a number of complaints from prisoners who are wanting to or are taking their matter on appeal. And then there seems to be some kind of breakdown in communication in terms of legal aid, the attorney, what's happening, issues around access to information. And those matters then referred to legal aid. Perhaps just to mention, and our chair has already spoken about it, this commission was also involved in the Krumpint incident, which occurred earlier this year. The commission currently the status of that investigation is that there are draft findings and recommendations, so that report has not been released yet. But it would certainly be shared with this committee once it is. The commission is also currently involved in litigation at Lindela, and obviously we realise that's something which would fall under the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee. But it also goes going through litigation around cases of detention. I think to sum up then, and I think in terms of a way forward with the committee and the kind of discussions that we would welcome having, is that both the committee and the commission, in different ways, in terms of our respective powers, do have a common agenda when it comes to the promotion and protection of human rights. And how is it that in forwarding the common agenda, can we use our different powers more effectively in the future? And I think I've just highlighted there, and I will leave it at this, particularly in terms of what the Commission has chosen as strategic focus to look at the overall framework of ensuring that we better protect and promote the rights of all persons deprived of liberty, not just prisoners. Chair, would you like to add anything?
No, not after what he told us. I just wanted to answer this question, not to answer, but to raise an issue. The technology to be installed in prisons. I want to say we have not, as a commission, taken a position. But this matter, to us, is particularly important. For instance, when you go to Lidela at this graduation center, they do have that way you can see it and actually see what's happening everywhere in the center. But that information is not necessarily made public to everybody because of the privacy of the institution. But for instance, where there are fights, you just zoom into that specific incident, just like you do here. The camera phone is intercepted every day, but nobody does anything about it. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying the reason why you register a phone, why would you register if you don't want to check crime? I think it is part of what we get. But all I'm saying is that our view is that we must weigh the interest of the prisoners and the interest of the community at large. If you look at the fourth generation rights, there begins to be this so-called fourth generation rights, where, for instance, you want to make sure that in all the public places where me and you can find ourselves to be, we must make sure that it is a safe place. So if you are to be arrested or not, number one, being good at prison where you can be raped and nobody will care. I don't know whether I will be able to. So I'm just saying, let us look at it very much objectively. It's not something that we need to rush and conclude it, but at the same time, if we look at the consequences that are happening every day in our prison, something that should have been done yesterday. But I'm just saying my views. I'm not saying sharing with you what the commission has discussed and decided, but the fact that we have raised it is something that we take back to our commission, and then we'll look at it and then maybe engage you to see what could be the limitation, what is it that can be done, because it is very important. I was sharing this with the Zimbabwean who says there must be no condoms in prison and what have you, and he says, no, we don't do it. And I said, look, you will do it the day that you will be arrested, and you find yourself in prison and see what happens inside. Then you will understand why you need condoms in prison. So it's a very sensitive matter, but it's a matter of life and death.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, for the presenter. We'll open up for general comment and questions from members. I note Mambuena. I note Nicolet Max. Let's start those two. And then Marisa.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. And also thank you for the presentation. And Chairperson, I think we need each other here. It's unfortunately on your open remarks you did explain your frustration in terms of coming to this call. And we do have a lot of challenges
and hopefully this is not the first time that you will come to this committee, because there's a lot that we need to do with the human rights. Firstly, people outside there, they see human rights as organization that is only looking for the inmate, not the victim. I want to know, Chairperson, that how is their relationship with the victims? That's one question. Then two, Chair. The prisoners knows too much about the human rights when they're inside the center. But when they do wrong outside, they don't see that they are evaluating the rights of the other people. That's why I'm asking this question of the victims. Chair, I want to check again in terms of privileges. What is the difference of the privileges and the human rights? I'm asking this because the presenter talked about the rights of the inmate in terms of the box. That in terms of their complaints, they're getting complaints of not getting books, of not getting medicine. Yes, but I'm worried about the books. That is it the books fall under the rights or falling under the privileges? Because sometimes we find an inmate, the privileges and the rights to them is the same. And the privileges is for those that have been treated, member management, member management. That means their situation now has been changed than before. So, but when they go to complain, they complain differently. Now, Chairperson, I want you to check again the main issue that makes us to meet with the human rights is the rape that is happening in our center. In terms of a private of the person. But here we're talking about inmates. We're talking about the challenge that we're facing in our center when the center is locked. We call it the master, chaplain, after the master. Whereby no one is looking inside what is happening. Wanted to get a view of the Human Rights Commission in terms of this CCTV, because you find that the inmate have killed inside in the center, and sometimes you get the card that they are having in their center, in the center, that is what Winnie's name, and they'll take this card of Winnie on top of the body that the body that is dead. As if it is really that has done that. Then really now must be double charged for killing inside in the center. Meanwhile it's not him. Therefore, how are we going to solve that problem? To make sure that inmates are not making other inmates get sentenced that was not done by him inside in the center. And how are we going to stop this killing without knowing who has killed? There's a witness. If we can check the reports, all the reports of the inmates that are dying inside in the center, you never get the witness. You never get who has been killed that person. And Chairperson has talked about the members and the inmates. Same apply to the members. You'll find that they will say the member has killed by the inmate. But where is this inmate? You'll find that this inmate has been transferred. But if he was killed by the inmate, and you'll never know how is this inmate has been killed. So we've got that challenge, because all these things happen on the dark chapter. So that's why this comic now feels that let's get something that we are going to see inside what is happening. As there's this human right that is owned by us and in our constitution, that everybody got a right of privacy. But in terms of the image, we're talking the culture. Which is that this right mustn't be equal. There must be difference between the inmate and myself that is outside. Thank you, Chairperson.
Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know from the Commissioner. Given the fact that torture is not on the law books as yet as a crime, what is in place to ensure that it is going to be on our law books? And these complaints, which you mentioned in your presentations, I think it is your club number 7, depending on the nature of the matter, the HARC in some instances monitors matters that are referred to us. Now, how many of these matters are currently with just and been monitored, given our mandate as Correctional Services Committee, Oversight Committee? When you adjudicate these complaints, is it only been done nationally or at the provincial level as well? And these complaints which were reported from the Department of Correctional Services, did you receive it via the officials, via JUCS, or is it referred to you directly from the emails? Given, I'm asking the question because you indicated that your people don't visit actually the correctional centers. Now, do you have the presenter indicated that, you know, a violation of human rights is as broad as God's grace. It's huge. Now, for the purposes of legislation, do you have an acceptable definition? What constitutes, a violation of human rights in what, in terms of torture? What constitutes torture? And if so, and he also indicated the outreach programs to old age homes and whatever institutions. On a daily basis, we experience newspaper reports of the abuse of power by state institutions, officials like the police, correctional services, etc. Now, what is in place from your side to educate as a preventative act those officials in institutions to behave in terms of our constitution? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a very sensitive matter that we are discussing today in correctional sector. That's why earlier in our own deliberations at our internal basis of the committee, I asked about the workshop with Arctic and the Human Rights Commission and everybody involved. For us to benefit and add value to our country's constitution. Chairperson, to me, the President referred to us in his zone that we must think out of the box. And currently us, civil society, I don't think we are doing that, Chairperson. Why am I saying that? Every country's got its own dynamics and its own scenarios. We've got development countries, already developed countries. We've got countries that are underdeveloped. We've got developmental states. And we are not developed yet. We are not yet Uhuru. Saying that, how broad are we going to look at human rights in prison? Because we have to, talking to this, we have to talk to those who look after these aggressive people. I want to add to what Honorable Winnie alluded to. We are talking of people who wronged society. Now they are in a correctional center to be rehabilitated. Some of them come from broken families, given the history of the country. Given the history of the country in terms of the design of this center. Comes from apartheid. Coupled with that, we come to the PCPs that are better designed, that are not overcrowded. The BCA centers are overcrowded. We are sitting with the very same capacity the commissioner was referring to in terms of the commission itself. The very same capacity challenge is in BCA. Now, if that we are referring and where to all complaints are referred to, doesn't have the necessary things, the tools. The system doesn't talk to that. And it needs all of us together under one roof, brainstorm, come up with a solution for a preventative mechanism. It's so sensitive, Chair, from where I'm sitting. We talk about young remand detainees rape in the center. Where do you draw the line? Whose right is violated? The one who is raped or the one who is raped? We must also talk to the very same inmates stabbing those officials that are looking after them. There are many, many factors that we have to look. Maybe we met too late in our term. We've got so many things to put on the table to clarify ourselves so that we can come up with an amendment if there needs to be, to amend even clause in our constitution. The rape one is very serious. I had an interview on the DFM of the Free State Chamber. And the public was hammering, saying that, member, how are you going to address the rape in correctional center? I was explaining this and I explained that. The next caller will say, no, you are not responding to what we are asking. How are you going to address the rape after local? Whose right is violated here? Explain to us. Chairperson, we came nowhere with that interview. There was no relevant response that satisfied the public that called in to that interview. I was more worried coming from that interview and more confused. Whose rights are you really talking about? It is your not commissioner. It doesn't have this. We are battling every time when we meet and when we sit here looking at their disturbing reports.
why we wanted to go abroad and go and look even in Africa for best practice to strengthen and add value to the system and to add value to checks. Chairperson, what I want to pose question to Commissioner is the PPPs of this country, the PPP sector, did the Human Rights Commission visit those sectors? I ask specifically this question. Because the oversight to that center, every time when the portfolio is going to that center, we come across very disturbing torture. But nobody is raising it alarmingly, like torture is raised alarmingly at the DCS center. So to me, it confused me. Even civil society, I'm not afraid to say that they are not raising it. So this is a sensitive matter that we will not even deliberate or satisfy ourselves today here, Chairperson. From where I'm sitting, Chairperson, I had the first time, I don't even want to say offender. It's a family. This person, young, from where I'm sitting, I'm sure he was not guilty, he was not charged, he was remanded. Because he was raped in center, we buried him. The person who raped him is now protected for his rights. Whose rights are we really talking about, Chair? Thank you.
Mr. Sell?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd just like to follow on from the questions about capacity, because there's an additional problem. I mean, not only is there no capacity and the inspecting judge complains about capacity, complains about capacity, you complain about capacity, nobody seems to have capacity to do what needs to be done. But there's an additional problem as well, and that deals with competing jurisdictions. So, for example, within the context of a detained or imprisoned person, you can start off in a prison cell, in a police cell. You then go to a court where your jurisdiction is the Department of Justice. You then go into a van, which is the jurisdiction of the police again. You then go to a prison where you're in the jurisdiction of correctional services. And in each case, there's a different set of persons that are supposed to be guaranteeing your human rights. Now, this is a big problem because in the context where nobody is speaking to one another and where everybody's looking after their turf, there's a very real prospect that a very major travesty or infringement of human rights can occur somewhere in the system and it just falls between the cracks. It's everybody's responsibility, but it's nobody's responsibility. Now, it comes back to what Mrs. Pavlito was saying. Who, in the end, has got bottom line responsibility for this? And who is going to take bottom line responsibility for this, certainly within the context of OPCAT, and in that context, whether the Human Rights Commission has particular views in this context of what would be the most appropriate institution to be the national redemptive mechanism. Thank you, Chair.
Commissioner, you and your team, you read 10 minutes to respond to the first round, so that we never get a second round, because otherwise it means we're not going to have a meeting for a day. But after 10 minutes, I'll stop you, and I'll check you with another round for members.
Yeah, I'll just take the one that disturbed me most. This issue of this private prisons. It very serious matter. You know, it's nice, like privatizing things that government should do. And the next thing, you no longer have control. For instance, if I'm a public protector, I'm restricted to look into maladministration with the government service. But once that service has been given to somebody else, not my jurisdiction, it's an issue which I don't know how to answer. Maybe you as members of parliament, something that we need to revisit, because it's quite disturbing. Because the moment something comes private, it's private. And your human rights will kick in. Your labor laws will kick in. How dare you come to my private environment? A lot of things just follow us in such a situation. So it's worrying now. You report what you are saying, that it comes out of that, because the matter that they're dealing with, the majority of the people who are incarcerated are our children. Out of so many petty offenses, I mean, for a petty offense, you are arrested, you are raped in prison, and your life is doomed. I think it's something that maybe the committee needs to take time and reflect, because that's where you are using the nation. Surely, if out of prison there's children coming out, that has created criminals for them. I thought I would refer that. The next one that I just want to take, you know, our constitution is very new. We might say it's 10 years old or 16 years old. But the point is, a lot of processes have not been interpreted. They've not been tested. Because if you look at Section 35, sub 2, on the point of the books, the very same constitution says that everyone who is detained, including every sentenced prisoner, has the right to conditions of detention that are consistent with human dignity, including at least exercise and the provision at state expense of adequate accommodation, nutrition, reading material. We get it from the country, doesn't come from us, it's saying this very simple, and medical treatment. All of these things are listed here in the Constitution. But the other issue that we have to consider seriously is, what is the purpose of sending a person? Why do you send somebody to jail? I think all of these questions that, you know, these are competing issues, because sometimes when somebody is in jail, is serving 10 years, 5 years, that person is coming out of jail one day. You have a responsibility as a government to make sure that one day when that person comes out of jail, is reintegrated to society. I mean, just imagine how many prisoners we have today, if you can just think for a moment. Those people are not going to die there in jail. They're going to come out. What preparations are we making in and outside so that in the event of which is certain that these people come out, they can be accommodated within society? And we have seen many of them when they are given parole. 2-3 days they are bored, they want to go back to prison where they don't have to beg for food, they don't have to beg for watching the TV, they've got somewhere where they have now gotten used to. So it's not a very easy matter that can answer, especially you answer the one, you find that you are opening up the other side. The question of victim and who have, I got a story that was just painful when I was told what happens in prison, when they have killed somebody where they don't want to be there. You hold hands like this and you put the person that you don't like here.
Yeah.
And then you all of you just throw this person up and you all go back. The person down and stand.
Mm-hmm.
No evidence, nobody will talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm coming back to the point that they are saying, no, look, what do we do about this? What happens behind those walls? It's a matter that needs to be decided. It's very painful. At the end of the day, we need to weigh in the pros and cons. I think that one, we will debate it as a commission. We end of the day, all the questions that we are asking is just that our laws, constitution, and why it's not working. Whether it is the laws or it is the human error in terms of application, I don't know. But in this particular one, I think it's more worrying with the prevalence of things need to be looked at. I just chose that by the last two we shared with our colleagues, but you didn't got many of the ones that.
Thank you. I think we're running out of time, so I'll just focus primarily on the complaints and legal issues. In terms of the police, the majority of prisoners' complaints come directly from prisoners. They use either, they write letters, so if the commission receives complaints by email, fax, telephone, occasionally some prisoners do seem to have access to cell phones and call. Yes. And, but primarily the majority do come from letters. The recourse to the commission really is after they have exhausted other measures, both in terms of the IPV or officials. I just wanted to clarify the referral issue. The majority of prisoner-related matters relate to legal representation and are referred to Legal Aid South Africa in terms of the mandate. The issues dealing with conditions in prison, we refer to the Office of the Inspecting Judge. However, the requirement to refer is obviously a discretionary one. The commission may refer. It does retain matters which we now view are serious or prima facie human rights violations. And as Judith, I think, mentioned, there are a number of complaints which may relate to, for example, equality, discrimination on the basis of religion, access to information, freedom and security of the person, the right to life. Obviously, the commission retains interest in those issues and continue to monitor them. We, in our engagements, do engage directly with DCS, Legal Aid, where appropriate, and often, very often, more recently, the Western Cape with Parole Board, around issues of parole. There was also a question just in relation to the issue of rights. I think the Constitution speaks about which rights may be limited under what circumstances. In the course of making an investigation, the Commission obviously has to conduct an investigation and has to actually apply the law to the facts. In terms of doing so, obviously one looks at the legal framework, but we also look at precedent in terms of either the Constitutional Court or our High Court in terms of interpretation of rights. And so any finding which is made of the Commission is subject to that process, and as you're aware, can be taken on review to a court. I think in terms of the issue of competing jurisdiction, as is often the case, the prisoners do come to the Human Rights Commission as a last recourse after they're exhausted. So in some instances where they've been waiting 5 years for legal aid to lodge their appeal, or where they have not received satisfactory results in their view from various officials. So we often are the last point of call in terms of that issue. I think I'm going to hand over to Judith just to take the other questions. Thank you.
Okay, I'm just going to make two points, which is picking up on a number of comments that have been made just to end off. I think certainly the issue of rape in prisons and CCTV cameras, I've been having a serious deja vu here today, and I'm not too sure if it is this parliamentary committee or another one in which we had a similar discussion in years gone by. I mean, I think that this has been an issue which has been on the minds and the agenda of Parliament for some time. It's an issue where one can't get a straightforward yes or no. It's going to be very contentious, both legally, but also one needs to look at the research and the studies to see practically whether it will in fact be effective. And I think, you know, the time has come, pardon the pun, to bite the bullet and go and explore. And maybe there is a need for some kind of meeting or workshop, and I'm certain, as the Chair has said, the Commission could be involved in that. Let's explore this issue, because even if a conclusion is reached, it is the kind of issue which is going to be contentious. It may be the subject of litigation one day, but let's at least go through the processes and move towards the issue. Because certainly when a person is sentenced to go to prison,
the budget doesn't add, and Jeff said it has to be raped on the first night. And everyone is in agreement to that. And I think just finally, just to tie a whole lot of matters together, there's been mention yesterday about a workshop in relation to JICs and in terms of the challenges which they're currently experiencing, about looking at the JICs mandate, how it can be given more teeth. I think it's a wonderful opportunity to, in conducting that workshop and debating the issues, to have UpCat on the table as well. Because if we are going to move forward, and if we need to find some teeth, and if we need to see how could we make JICs more effective going forward, let's look at UpCat. Because UpCat wasn't pulled out of the air. UpCat was determined at an international level as the most effective way in which to prevent torture in places where persons are deprived of their liberty. That is why countries have signed the UpCat, that's why they have implemented it, that is why they have established national preventative mechanisms in their countries. So why not let's join those two things together, and that goes to the debate. What is the Commission's view? And I think that the Commission has had many discussions with many role players. And it's clear the Commission can't come out and say this is the solution. This is a matter which all interested and affected role players, including the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, we all need to sit down together to thresh out what are the options. The work has been done in this regard by civil society. There have been meetings held. We are aware that amongst government departments, work has been done. So let's just bring everyone who's been sitting, I think, yes, sometimes people do sit in silos. Let's bring everyone together and let's really see how we can move these issues forward. Thank you.
Mr. Abraham?
Why don't you question?
Before you start, Mr. Abraham, it's, we've got 20 minutes left, so maybe we should get to the point. I don't think this is going to be the end of the interaction. There would be more interaction, so I'm just, in the interest of putting your question and getting a response, that we be as succinct as possible. Mr. Abraham, and then you follow Mr. Pelissa.
Chairperson, I'll try and install the Minister of Economic Affairs in me and try and be economic. But Chairperson, this particular issue is such a complicated one. But I'm going to try and get down to basics. Firstly, Chairperson, there are international treaties that South Africa has still not ratified. It cannot be, Chair, that you are a party to the constructing of a treaty and you don't ratify it in 6 years. So that is something, Chair, that can be done, that we should pick up. Secondly, Chairperson, the whole issue, Chair, is that the problems really arise after lockdown. Now, what do we have in a cell? What I see is a warehouse. So many people packed like sardines, their human rights get violated. Now, Chairperson, we have to think very innovatively about what we are going to do to ensure the safety of the individual that has been entrusted to the state now, that individual's welfare, well-being and future is constitutionally prescribed as to what we are supposed to be doing with that person. And we need to, I agree with the Human Rights Commission, that we need to put our heads together. There's no point, Chair, having continuous symposiums and workshops and what have you, and when we leave that workshop, we forget everything we said. Nothing gets implemented. State will have to come and make more resources available in order to bring to fruition those things that we so glibly talk about and we then fail to do. So we need to have resources here. We need to dedicate more resources. And I don't want to venture to say what should possibly be done, but one should look at the possibility, Chair, in order to carry out constitutional obligations where the lockdown should not be in the form of the warehouse that we have. It's going to cost resources, but it has to be done. Because a person that has wronged society has to pay a price. But on the other hand, that person's human rights have to be respected. So that's the bottom line, Chair. Now, Chair, the other issue here is, I'd like to know from the Human Rights Commission, Mrs. Dagmar, you say that you find the majority of problems confronted by inmates are legal aid related. In other words, they need to get some other form of legal assistance. In your opinion, do you find that that particular legal aid bureau is able to be of assistance in terms of resources, in terms of human capacity, whether they have it? If they don't, then we are again in breach of a constitutional obligation, and that needs to be put right. Chairperson, the other issue is naturally an interesting one, where in the original presentation it was said that the prison visits that are made by Jigs are. And that has been my experience when I look at all the judicial inspector reports that have been submitted yet, are reactive. They react to a situation that has taken place. I mean, that's how it's working at the moment. Now, Chairperson, if we have created a particular institution to carry out a specific function, then there must be an evaluation of the value of the function that are being carried out. And if the value is merely a reactive one and not a proactive one, we need to see that we have a balance between the two. Its job is reactive in a way, and its job is also a proactive, to see that the rights of inmates are respected and that they are not put at the mercy of anyone, whether it is an official that violates their rights in terms of abuse or torture or whatever, or between individuals, inmates. So we need to look at that seriously, Chair. And along with that, Chair, we need to look seriously at the independence of Jesus. You cannot go and tell your master, who is providing you with your budget, that the master is doing things wrongly. Doesn't work like that, Chair. It has to have the utmost degree of independence if we are to succeed. Finally, Chairperson, there's an old adage. Cock is cheap, but money buys the whiskey. So we can say many things, Chair. But I get the impression that if we really want to carry out constitutional obligations, we want to carry out rehabilitation, it cannot be said that when we make a visit to any correctional service center, the overwhelming majority of the inmates there are not aligned to any programs. And unless you keep them busy, you are constantly going to sit with these problems. Because remember, Chair, at the core of that particular center's function is to rehabilitate people. And you can only rehabilitate people not by allowing them to be locked up in a cell for 23 hours, an hour or two perhaps for exercise. But that person, a person, has to be kept active. And in the 4 years that I've been on this committee, Chair, I have not seen the department coming forward with innovative plans, innovative ideas as to how you can create a better human being than the one that came into that system. Thank you very much, Chair. I rest my case.
Thank you, Chair.
I just want to bring under the attention of the commissioner. These cities do operate with state funding, millions of funding of the state. So we do have an obligation to monitor them.
host the Human Rights Commission, civil society, and the portfolio committee. For us to think out of the box, like the president is reminding us consistently, is to act decisively. And that act is to have pilot projects. We will have to pilot. That's why he's saying that chapter is right when it is. We will have to be bringing everybody under one roof, because we have so many, many, many things to put on this table that we don't even know where to start, what to leave, what to take out, because this meeting is outstanding, like in the day before yesterday. There are many, 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 many challenges and many issues. Yes, we are 19 years old democracy, but this is a young democracy, given the broken families, the history that we come. We are not there yet. And for us, is to go and change the systematic, both constitutional. We are the ones, we are the legislators. We must amend if we have to. But how can we amend? If we can explore and pilot so that we can learn out of mistakes, we have to test some of the things that we are reading. Summits, yes, we will have a workshop, out of the workshop resolutions, but we have to implement some of these resolutions as pilots so that we can prove that if we test it practically, because talking and writing long English, whatever language, will not take us somewhere. But to pilot, to test, will take us to see practically, because the practicality is what is going to count here. Whether we will have which international convention and what, it will take us nowhere. We will have to pilot, we must not be afraid to test ourselves and test this constitution. We've got a beautiful constitution, they are saying abroad. But, commissioner, they are not following it. Why are they not following our constitution? But they will tell us, Africa's got the best constitution. They will never follow it. So I don't understand also this international convention, commissioner. Because we will have to look at also official killed. They are also crying, this year is also crying about capacity. The one roof that commissioner is talking about, we need it very insufficient. Because this is a sensitive matter that we are discussing here today. But a pilot must be our priority. Out of any workshop that will come out, everybody will go, must go and think out of the box and pilot one of these projects. It won't help us also to put in funding on workshops and taking with the society from each international country, from where, but we are going also nowhere. We will be also wasting time and resources, Jefferson, I think.
Thank you very much. Commissioner, I do think you accept now that the area of correctional services is an area that maybe inadvertently you didn't give the kind of attention that it requires. Looking even at your annual report, you talk about the noteworthy complaints that you receive, and I accept that these are not exhaustive. There's nothing that refers to correctional services or anything like that in here. You talk about your program for human rights advocacy, and you talk about stakeholder workshops and all those type of things. I do think that we would need to consciously be able to go and make inroads into our 160,000 population in the inmate facility. Many of those people, Commissioner, that we visit, all they need is information. Now, whether it's about what are the criteria for parole, what is a human rights abusers or signs of human rights abuse, many of them just need information. And with that information, they are then able to act. Because we have things like the independent prison visitors where they are, they're supposed to do the type of things. We have things. So I just think it's about coordinating. And that you need to start making yourself visible through, and we fight the JICS, we fight the department, and there are many NGOs that are either in there or have a footprint that we can use to deal with these things. Because, as you were saying, Commissioner, this is a constitutional requirement. It's not an option. It's a constitutional requirement. I've said it, and I'm saying it again. Sooner rather than later, as government, they're going to face a serious problem with a charge of human rights abuses in our facilities. A serious one. So why should we wait until that happens before we can look at something? I thought the mandate of the Human Rights Commission is to be proactive as far as humanly possible. It doesn't help us to, after the event, say indeed there was a human rights abuse and 50,000 people got malaria or got whatever the case might be. I do think that our role has to be a bit more proactive, and therefore the question that was raised earlier on should we visit prisons, I think is a no-brainer. I really think is a no-brainer. I'm not saying you should visit all the prisons, but certainly you should be visiting one or two of them. You know, the judges of the Constitutional Court do that, so that they can for themselves get a sense of what is happening in the facilities. So it shouldn't arise with the Human Rights Commission to go and visit on an unannounced basis. If not, we do oversight on a regular basis. Maybe when we go to our oversight, we shall inform you so that one of your members in that area can join us. Just so that when we have this discussion, you have a feel for the kind of things that we pick up in the area. But I do think that the question of should you be visiting really shouldn't arise. It's how, when, how often, and so on. I think we should be talking about that, because we, as this department, or this committee, take these matters seriously. That's why we've been at the forefront of pushing the envelope in terms of CCB, all those type of things. Because, really, some of us still have the scars of these things in the past. And we can't sit here and pretend as if they're not happening. The final point that we would want to make from our side, Commissioner, is that we're going to have to find a way of, and I'm not the others, but maybe the one that you think you need to monitor, to talk to the portfolio committee about. You've indicated quite a few, you just keep to six because they might not be of a serious nature. But those that are of a serious nature, even if you just inform us that these are the five we're looking at. Because Krumpens happened on the 7th of January 2013. It is now almost the 7th of July 2013. To come up in 2 months' time and say these are the things that happened there, it's not helping anybody. It's not helping anybody that it's 8 months after the fact. And many of us are doing these kinds of things. So if you inform us, we're able to give you feedback where we have, you give us feedback, and we would also put you under pressure. Sometimes we'll put you under pressure, the portfolio committee, and say, but you can't continue to sit on this matter for so long as a portfolio committee. So I think there must be checks and balances from all sides. So those are the few comments that I wanted to make. You can respond to them or note them in your closing remarks. But we want to be very clear, Commissioner, that we are very grateful that you've taken the time to come talk to us. You don't be the last. We will continue to engage with you on these matters that are very important. We insist that the department and that JICS come to us once a quarter to explain their operation. Maybe we would ask one of you to come around. We've insisted that the Legal Aid Board come into those meetings, so that when the inspecting judge says ABC, we are able to ask the Legal Aid Board if you are agreeing about it. I mean, these are all mechanisms of trying to put us all on the same page. So we might just give you our program of our quarterly interactions with the department and inspecting judge, where they give us a report on their quarterly operations. And our appeal is to make it one big family. We're all on the same side as far as human rights is concerned. We'll panel each the acts if it needs to in terms of JICS, and we will change our program if it needs to be, and we'll ask you to change yours if it needs to be, in terms of making sure that at least those that are incarcerated are not left out of this big net that you look at, Commissioner, because they also, the 160,000 inmates and the 41,000 officials that work behind those walls are also people whose human rights must be guaranteed. We're talking there about 200,000 people, if you take officials and the inmates. It's just too big a number that we can just ignore. Thank you very much. We will allow you, Commissioner, and your team to make your closing remarks. And we will then be in touch with you in terms of how we want to interact going forward through our official spokesperson or official mouthpiece, and he will be the one that will communicate with you. And maybe also, just at this point, before you leave, somebody in your office, and Cindy must talk about what is the best way to communicate. I received emails saying, we might have sent a letter, and Cindy says, well, maybe they must use my Gmail address or something address, because Parliament doesn't. Maybe we should find a way that when letters go to and from, it reaches the principal's time, yes. But that is not something that you need to manage to do. It's something that we can do. Over to you, Commissioner.
Yeah, let me say thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I've indicated from the start that this is one of the best opportunities that we as the Commission needed. And like I give an example of what is happening within justice and the like. The mandate of the Commission is very broad, after. And the reason why we asked for money, we were very much aware that we are not even skilled in some subjects. I mean, look at the socio-economic rights itself. If you look at health, we're supposed to also go to hospital to see whether that right is there, which is not happening at all. Housing, water and sanitation, what tomorrow are here in Cape Town, that day was very interesting. It's massive. It's something that when you think of it, you don't even know where to start, where to end. We're not saying we need a huge bureaucrat, but we're just asking something that will enable us to do the kind of the work that the chairperson is saying. Because, I mean, it is important to have a feel of what's happening in each of the centers, for example. And we will accept this. This is not a problem with us. That's why I say, look, it has given us the opportunity to see what the committee think we can do in this particular area. We'll try and do it, but I can assure you, as I said today, we are just over stress, there's a few conditions. We'll try and do it. We'll visit my new basis of detention, includes police station, to start with. Because things are happening. A lot more in police station, perhaps much more than what's happened in the other places. So it's such a huge challenge which we will try and work details with you. I mean, in principle, we agree, and then we'll work details. In terms of visiting, we also agree. We'll work details because the way our budget is so small, it would be good when we come for justice, we make sure we line up other committees so that we use resources in that manner. I mean, we agree with this recommendation. We also want to meet with the judicial inspector to see where can we draw synergies. Also, to look at their reports, if they are also tabled with us so that we share. And if they pick up something that is of a human right nature, we'll also appreciate if the judicial inspector can tell you, I've been to this prison, I picked up this particular human right violation. So that we zoom in there and then it minimizes our visiting too many prisons, where he has been or she has been. She will let us know and then we go there. So, but all in all, we must thank you. Thanks very much for what we take this in the spirit. We'll try it.
Thank you. And to our friends in the media, I'm sure you didn't come and check whether we are productive only, but I'm sure you have the responsibility to share information with South Africa. You can be part of that advocacy that we are serious about human rights in our case and in the facility. Thank you very much for the friends in the media, for our friends from the NGOs, from our friends from the academic institutions. I hope you've learned something as intern members of parliament. This is our last sitting until we return sometime in July, but we will keep you informed through the normal channel. Thank you very much for meeting. Can members of the committee spend 2 minutes here, because I think their visitors are sitting in the back. Those visitors know themselves, they can just stick around. Others, you are free to leave. IDT, they can stay for 2 minutes. The colleagues of IDT, you can ask for 2 minutes here.
Okay.
Hey, man.